Chapter 2. The call came in at 9 a.m. on a glorious Sunday. The familiar voice, tight with battle readiness, but tinged with uncertainty.
Too early for you?
No, been up for a while.
How you feeling?
Great.
Well, I've got one. Been here since 7:30. I figured maybe...
Sure.
Also, he said, not far from you, if you're feeling up for it. Back in the old days, you probably could have run over here.
I said, give me the address. The trip was 4.8 miles from my house in Beverly Glen, a feasible run BC, before crushing, but even then I'd have driven because I like to get to scenes fast. I wheeled the Seville down the nameless former bridal path that winds down treacherously from our half-acre, drove south on Beverly Glen past the skinny chock-a-block houses that line the road in our neighborhood, and transitioned to the grand estates just north of Sunset Boulevard. At sunset, I hooked right and continued to the western gate of Bel Air, sped up Bellagio Road before turning onto a series of serpentine side streets, reversing the process. Eight-figure palaces followed by progressively more modest houses on limited woodsy lots. Every crime scene's unique, but there's also a sameness to them. The procedures, the activities of those who've chosen to work with worst-case scenarios, the emotional tone. The first thing you see is what I've come to think of as death's parking lot. Detectives unmarked sedans, patrol cruisers, crypt vans, hybrid compacts driven by coroner's investigators. Behind all that, the inevitable yellow tape. Canary bright, and sadder for that. This was my first crime scene in 4+ months, and simply arriving tweaked my brain and made me feel alive. No point wondering what that said about me. I was imagining, wondering, lasering the layout. This lot was so thickly wooded that no structure was visible from the street. To the right of the vehicles, a burly young officer stood guard. The foliage hid neighboring properties as well, creating an illusion of forest. Cruelly peaceful. Usually, Milo informs the cops that I'm coming, and they lift up the yellow strand. Sometimes they even smile and welcome me by name. This time I had to show my ID to Burley, who looked to be allergic to smiling. He examined my driver's license as if it were written in hieroglyphics, reread, checked me out squint-eyed, stepped away, and made a call. Returning, he favored me with a lemon-sucking frown, said, "Okay," reluctantly, and left me to lift my own damn tape. Trying not to read too much into any of it, I ducked under and picked up my pace, ignoring the twinges in my ribs that followed each footfall, aiming myself toward the old days. The forest turned out to be little more than a poorly trimmed amalgam of ficus and eugenia backed by huge shaggy silver dollar eucalyptus. Decades ago, a plague had killed off most of the eugenia hedges in Southern California, but a few survivors remain. The ficus tack-on said someone had settled for a quick fix in lieu of re-landscaping. Getting past the greenery landed me in front of a small flat lawn fronting a one-story cedar-sided ranch house. In a suburban setting, another dated 60s throwback. In Bel Air, $5 million, if you hired the right real estate agent. A second tape barrier ran across the front door. A black Maserati convertible sat in a gravel driveway to the left of the house. Newer model, the name of a Beverly Hills dealer framing the license plate. Littered with dust and leaves. Tennis racket and balls on the passenger seat. When the driveway reached the house, it converted to concrete and continued, ungated, toward the rear of the property. The only feasible entry this morning. I walked along the house, thought about easy access to a killer. No sign of Milo or anyone else until I reached the end of the drive and turned right. And there he was, along with a pair of techs, a CI, and half a dozen uniforms with nothing to do but look official. Milo looked the same. Why wouldn't he? Tall, mastiff-jowled, top-heavy above oddly thin legs, he wore wrinkled cock.